Friday afternoon deploy, drank all the cold brew at the new co-working space. Hands up. I've hit record.
Hand check.
Okay. I need to see your hands at all times. Okay. I can't believe it. This is...
It's a junior high bus trip. Keep them up.
It's like a mine.
Yeah.
It's like a minefield now. This software.
Bert, touch your keys.
We've just started recording, and we're using our... browser-based podcasting software that we will not name, though it's somewhere back in other podcasts for those who want to discover, I'm sure. And
there's not that many providers, Tyrell.
You don't need to highlight that, Chris. We found at least two buttons already in just kind of talking through things that will instantly kick you out of the recording session. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, hey, you were a part of the podcast. We were glad you were here. Now, obviously, you're done.
You're using the global we like anyone but you did anything.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But this is true.
That warrants correction. I was the one who left the session twice.
More than once. Yeah.
It was great, though. It was great.
Yeah. Well, one of them was like trying to find a setting to let you do a thing. And I was just like, hey, let's do this so that this doesn't happen. And then it happened, but
it happened anyway.
We weren't recording yet. And that was the beauty of it.
That's the key. Yeah. Hopefully we won't have an out of sync problem again.
No kidding. Well, and I'd mentioned this earlier, but I got a notification from the company that wasn't even in response to a support ticket. It was acknowledging a bug in Firefox. And of course, I'm the jerk who doesn't want to use anything Chrome-based if I can avoid it. And they're like, oh, yeah, people who don't use Chrome-based browsers may have experienced this. Sorry about that. Have you heard of Chrome? And I was like, great. So I am in a Chrome-based browser. I'm using Brave. I got to say, I'm on the fence. There are places where I see the benefits of it being Chrome-based, mostly that I can blur my background in That's Google nice. Hangouts now.
Right.
In Firefox, you can't do that.
Nope.
But I've definitely had some other quirks that make it clear that like this isn't a apples-to-apples comparison of Chrome.
Do you find that in your daily life as a developer, that rears its ugly head more than you thought it would? Not wanting to use Chrome?
Not as a developer, but as a user.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As a developer, it's fine for the most part. I'll get some weird things here and there, but as a user, and I'm accustomed to it. And I've grown used to people warning me that you can't use anything but Chrome on your website, but then Firefox works anyway. Like there are plenty of places that have built a thing and just tried to enforce Chrome, not confirming that it would or wouldn't work in Firefox. So I'll just kind of go like, well, you're not my real dad. I'm going to try it anyway. And I'll close the warning and the website works fine. But then there's times when...
Yeah, there's this
I'll get a warning.
Know, certain amount of risk we all take on as early adopters, right? Of just being like, oh, well, I'm going to try. Like, I'm just going to do it, right? And you don't realize that like, you know, the normal people out there in the world... You know, or on two previous versions of OS X, you know, and they're rocking the you know two previous versions of iOS 2, right? Not even thinking about these things. We're just out here like, oh yeah, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Who knows?
Speaking of early adoption pain, for one, everybody, we're excited to have a newish voice in the podcast. He was with us as a part of the big Lofty Labs, a Palooza. Last podcast, but we got Chris Allen with us today. Chris is director of marketing here at Lofty. My voice, sad to say, you probably at least somewhat recognize is Tyrell, and then Daniel's with us today. But Chris was one of our canary in the coal mines, because we as a company went on a pricing model with Apple that would allow us to get real new hardware all the time. And folks have been excited about these M1s, and we decided to get M1s into the hands of our non-engineers first, which these days is Chris and like Casey and I increasingly so as well, though we've not gotten, I don't think Casey's on an M1 yet. I was vying for potentially getting a small M1, but Chris, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your experience so that we can inform
folks. Was really exciting at first because I had almost bought one. Just because I, you know, wanted to try it out. I was really excited about it. And the move to Apple Silicones went so well for iOS devices. You know, I've been a MacBook Pro or a iPad Pro user for several generations now. I absolutely love the hardware. Use it as my main computer when I can. And so the prospect of trying out this, you know, the first of the new, you know, since they made the transition to Intel all those years ago, the first time they went back and made their own chip was really exciting. You know, got out of the box, was talking about how excited I was to use it. And within the first day had a kernel panic. And and forced shutdown. And it was so snappy out of the box that as soon as everything started to slow down, I knew there was a problem. Right. I mean, everything was lightning fast out of the box. And then before I'd even gotten through a day of use, it started slowing, getting slower and slower and slower and slower. And I knew something was happening. And then I got the kernel panic and the forced restart and, you know, all the fun error messages that accompany that. And I got to be honest, I was pretty bummed. I had higher hopes. And, you know, having been a willing participant of the full ecosystem for quite some time now, through my own choice and dollars, it was pretty sad to see that happen.
For sure. I was surprised that you got the kernel panic. Like normally we're avoiding new stuff, we being the developers, it's because we've got some random tool sets that we use, some kind of esoteric things. There were some languages that we lean into that are supported, but just like general use problems, we don't anticipate, especially not general use, like open browser, receive kernel panic. That's
the kind of thing I think about, like back when AMD processors were first a thing, you know, we're like, I'm going to take a risk on this. It's a lot cheaper. I'm going to see, you know, how it does. It's been ages since I even really encountered one of those in the wild, other than some, you know, screw up that I did on my own.
Yeah, we did it ourselves.
Yeah,
right. I think moving to OS X, the first one, this would have been in maybe, if I am right, and this would have been in like 2010, maybe. Mm-hmm. I upgraded and got just like a sea of kernel panics and had to downgrade, and that was a nightmare because I got a hold of somebody at Apple support. And it was just like, hey, I bought this and upgraded it and my machine just can't run. Can I please go back? And they're like, well, we can do this one time. Like, I didn't remember, because nowadays I'm pretty sure you can go back more easily. But for some reason,
I think so.
Some reason Apple support made it seem like a really big deal that they were letting me go back an operating system. There's like, you get to do this one time in your life. Play this part, and I was just like, I'm going to use this computer, so I guess. But it was pretty bizarre. But I took it back, and you know what it was? It wasn't that they let me go back. Is that they refunded me, because this is when they charged for new versions of the operating system. I got a one-time refund. I got money back from Apple.
Yeah, and that never happens.
No. So I got my money back and then almost immediately figured out what was causing the kernel panic by doing some research and re-upgraded.
Nice. So,
but that was before they were like just giving away all software.
Yeah.
as a means to get you to buy the hardware, which was a definite paradigm shift for sure. Yep.
Man, I had this huge gap. We had a Power PC when I was probably middle school age. And then I had no Apple anything until started working at Lofty. Like, just no Apple in between there. So it's all been, I mean, Windows stuff, but mostly Linux and Android stuff. I had Windows for some jobs, but it's not really it up until probably recently did not lend itself very well to non.NET development.
Yeah.
And even now it's more comfortable to do elsewhere still, but they've come quite a ways adopting Bash.
I think most people would be surprised how many of the companies making their Windows software are all on Macs or running Linux. I think people out in general population would be very surprised.
Oh yeah. I installed .NET on my Mac the other day. I had to do something that required that. And I was like, this
doesn't seem like it should happen.
So uncomfortable. I was so cringy the whole time. Like, I don't know what's happening now. This is very bad, very wrong. So ironically, I don't think I ended up having to use it. So I've got, this is on my personal computer. I have a MacBook that I use for just like home use, but it's got .NET installed on it. And so, because at first I thought I was installing Visual Studio, like full Visual Studio, Visual Studio code. And I was like, yeah, sure. And then I realized, it's like, wait, it's installing .NET on my Mac? But it's survived so far. No kernel panics.
Yeah. Just
on your hardware.
Beat the M1.
That's what you want. Beat M1. No kernel panics.
Yeah. That's all we need. So no blue screens.
And that's not, honestly, that's not even the first pain point I had. I have been living life as a 227-inch external monitor user for quite some time now, and am very, very spoiled by that. And the M1 only allows you one external monitor unless you're on the mini. The card only supports one video out. And there are some people that have found some technical workarounds, but you know they're way more out in the weeds than I'm comfortable with, especially on a piece of work hardware. And so that's another issue that lots of people with multiple monitor setups are going to have to deal with as the platform gets out there in the world. And the documentation on what's going on or how they're supporting it is really sparse. It's mostly like, just wait for the M2. Just don't buy this yet. If you're one of these people, just stop.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Oh, goodness. So you're doing two externals. So you're doing, are you using the computer in clamshell mode and then just using your externals? Or are you going three monitors, including the laptop monitor?
And previously, I would almost always end up just closing it and going in clamshell mode, because 227 inches is plenty of real estate for everything you need. If you need more, you're way more important. You're way more important than me. You're way cooler. You're doing way more than I am. 227 inches was fine, but I'm just so chained to that, you know, that many pixels, that I immediately started looking at ultra wide monitors as soon as I found out. And was looking at, you know, the big 49-inch monsters to try and get that much real estate back. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. But I'm not the only one feeling that way, because the things are sold out everywhere.
Yeah. Casey had a television for a little while for his monitor, like a 1080 big high def TV. And it was so big that rather than having separate monitors, he just had separate spots on the TV that he put things. It was ridiculous. He didn't keep it long. We'll have to ask him about it next time he comes on. But yeah, like I remember one of the first times, this is back when Lofty was in the old Bank of America building here in downtown Fayetteville, the Prior Center, I think is what it's called now. And the Lofty office in a co-working space. And Casey had set up his desk and he'd set it up with a trainer for his bike. So it was a bike desk. And of course it was his all black, no letters, Dvorak keyboard. So it was just like, no one touches my set. he didn't make it that inaccessible on purpose, but it was really clear. It's just like all the people in the co-working, if they make it into the Lofty side, will go nowhere near Casey's rig.
Yeah.
It was impressive. So speaking of that though, we're in new digs here. We're in new spaces. We had our big office, and that was great for a season. And then the combination of wanting to hire talent outside of market and COVID hit, and we went full remote and ended that space. But for a couple of reasons, we decided we wanted to have a physical space again as a company. And so now we have taken a, what, 4-room suite, I think, at a local co-working facility. And we're here and we're building out a physical podcast studio again, which is great. I'm in what will be the podcast studio. There's podcast pieces all over the room, but the main analog board's not in here and no interfaces. So I'm... hence us using this browser-based podcast software again. Ironically, because of that, Chris is actually here with me, but he has to be in a separate room on a computer so that we can have the tracks. And then Daniel's still at home. But, man, it's exciting to have a space again and one that we can kind of come in and out of and utilize and have a little bit of a presence without it being essential to the company. And it's pretty cool.
So. You know, it's exciting to be able to have a place where we can set stuff up to produce some of the content, do some of the things we're excited about doing, and kind of have a, you know, I'm in the conference room and having the conference table set up and our meeting set to be able to bring clients in and kind of, you know, show them the scope and scale of the company and what we're capable of and make sure that the space fits the presentation of what we're capable of, instead of, you know, some random phone room in a library somewhere we'd have to do. Yeah. But also still bringing that remote spirit, right? And so not having a bunch of dedicated desks that are people's specific desks where they feel that pressure, but having it as an option for those of us who are maybe interested in it or will possibly need to be here at certain points to do work. It's exciting.
Yeah. We talked about putting an exhibit mural in one of the rooms because we've created a co-working space for Lofty inside of a broader co-working space. Yo dog.
It's pretty meta.
Yeah, because we've got our standing desk benches from our old office in the main area, and then the podcasting space, the conference room that Chris is in, and that what we are lovingly calling the executive suite, which is where Casey will put all of his important things. But there's several desks in there. It's not going to be a dedicated office for him. But yeah, it's fun to have that back and allowing for collaboration for those of us who are in person to kind of gather and do stuff. And for when we bring in our full remote folks, because, you know, now we've got Will from Florida and Trent from Chicago and Justin from Colorado, and bringing them in for an all hands, we'll actually have a physical space to work in. They just want to come in to just kind of be here for one reason or another. That's really exciting too.
I didn't want to go up somebody's backyard for some random event.
We could do that, but I mean, what? Yeah, we'll bring them down to West Fork where I live, and they can all get ticks and chiggers and that West Fork, live all the stereotypical Arkansas life.
Yeah.
Have them chase some chickens for us and stuff like that.
Gotta love those ticks.
Oh, man. They are the worst.
Yeah.
And from Texas, we didn't really deal with ticks. And so when I came up here, the first time I got a tick on me, I was just like, that's it. I'm dead now. I'm going to get Lyme disease.
Yep, it's over.
And it was good being here.
And, did anybody did you ever get the speech about how you're allowed to take them off? Right? Like there's this like decorum for how you get a tick off of you. I cannot tell you how many times I've gotten a speech about appropriate tick removal. It's like, okay, all right, well, maybe.
What's inappropriate tick removal, Chris?
Well, you're not just supposed to pull them out, right? Like if their head can get lodged in you, or they can, I don't know, like puke into you or something. I can just remember the lists of summer camps I've been through.
If they stress, they salivate more, and that's supposed to itch more. I don't know. Yeah, I grew up in Memphis, and it wasn't a big deal there. We had a lot of mosquitoes, but we didn't really have a ton of ticks. So, yeah, it was a learning curve for moving from Tennessee to Arkansas.
Yeah. We were definitely covered in mosquitoes and fire ants down in South Texas, but none of that here. But, yeah, we joked about getting tick pullers. We hosted, like, a conference at a really nice wooded facility, like in the woods up in kind of the northern Ozarks on the state line of Missouri and Arkansas, and we joked about like in the swag bag we're gonna put branded tick pullers. That's just like, I guarantee they're not gonna get this at like reInvent or whatever it is, the AWS conference.
Nowhere else is gonna be handing out branded tick pullers. No.
So I don't know that you could find a swag company to put your logo on a tick puller.
That's an Oriental Trading special order right there.
Yeah, someone at AliExpress will do that. Yes. You're not getting that at whatever the main ones are here in the States. So I realized that, like, actually, we talk in office spaces. Chris, Daniel, did you guys ever make it to the old office?
Mm-mm.
Neither of you. Yeah. It's a brave new world.
Yep.
So that's fun. This is different, but it is just as exciting. I won't say it's better because there's a lot of great stuff about that space. Mm-hmm. But I think this is kind of going to be the best of both worlds. Chris, we were talking about it earlier, and it's just kind of, or maybe you just said it a few minutes ago, prioritizing that remote feel without the dedication of desks.
Because
we don't have those desks. They're all these houses. We were looking for chairs. We're just like, we seem to be light on chairs just because, like, that's because everybody took chairs home when we went remote. There's less chairs to have now. So,
I expect there's probably going to be quite a few companies that are doing it this way, kind of having a little bit of a hybrid instead of all one way or the other. Because, you know, some folks are more comfortable, you know, doing the working from home thing, but a lot of folks aren't. And, you know, you gotta, if you can, make space for both of those.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm super comfortable working from home. I've done it several jobs and, that's fine. But even here at my abode, there are days where it's best not to be here because it's going to be so loud.
Yeah.
Not visitors or whatever.
And there's companies realizing this real estate savings is awesome, but sometimes we need some space for something. Mm-hmm. And so not needing, you know, the whole four floors in the office tower they were paying for, that could be replaced with a co-working membership for their team or with, you know, five shared offices. And everybody rotates through and, you know, they get some solution or some shared Outlook calendar that they make that happen. And I think it's going to be much more of the new normal.
It's interesting too, because it seems like Northwest Arkansas has had a hard time hanging on to persistent co-working spaces. Like we've had a bunch of them that started up, they did really well for a while and then they either got priced out or the situation changed and they couldn't stay open. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's been several rounds of it and it all seemed like it was going to stick. And, you know, for whatever reason, a lot of them didn't make it or got repurposed in a different way. And a lot of the real estate's changed in our area anyway. But, you know, this time it looks like it's probably going to have to stick. Like, there's not going to be a choice.
Yeah. There's definitely, we were talking about it yesterday, that there will be far more remote people, and remote people will want an option. To your point, Daniel, like, my house is busy right now. I want to go be somewhere else and not be at a Starbucks. Like, there's just a difference when you move it, walk into a co-working space.
Yeah. Starbucks is, I mean, I tried coffee shops for a while. It's hard personally for me to concentrate in that kind of environment. Like, I need to be able to have more control over my context. Mm-hmm. And that was not enough, you know, even with really good headphones, that was not enough for me. So I get
as soon as you got to start making phone calls or got to get into deep work mode, it ain't gonna work.
Like, every time you open your mouth to get the mocha,
yes,
espresso spray going.
Yes, it just isn't going to work.
Like, somebody's there messing with you. They're watching you. Every time you open your mouth, they turn the steam on.
the Onyx by my house just went back to normal. The bar went back to normal, and they allowed seating everywhere again. And even at 8 today, I swear, every seat was taken up by somebody in a Patagonia fleece. On their MacBook Pro, typing away. And it was like, you guys have all just been cooped up waiting for the second you could get back in this coffee shop. You had your outfit laid out last night. You were ready.
Oh, that's good. And then they're in Puritan. They're just like, mm-hmm. in those spots now.
Oh, yeah.
Knowing the region.
Yep.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So. No, it's fine. It's interesting to see the different spaces here. I'm excited to see what kind of, as the space grows, there's the potential for opportunity. And then the introvert in me already hates the fact that to unlock the door here, I had to sign up to an app that has a list of all the people who also use this space. And I'm just like, I don't want these people to know I'm working here. Why do these people have to be able to message me in this app to be like, hey, I see you're here. Do you know anything about HTML?
Can you fix my printer?
Yeah. Yeah, you guys are software, right?
Nope.
Our router's not working right.
Yeah, nope. You just go down to the store, you buy a new printer, get fresh ink, you know, like everybody else.
Yeah. Just buy a new printer. You're out of ink, buy a new printer.
Yep.
Every time.
I don't anticipate it being that bad, but that's the part of, like, I fear that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I fear that, but there's so many co-working spaces have become the norm in so many places. Like, I remember a while back, I was working with a company that Zappos was trying to recruit to come work in the new kind of ecosystem of startups they were building in Old Vegas and the downtown project. And yep. That was part of what they were saying was like, look, just for this much a month, you get an address in this co-working space and you're now multi-site. Like, they iterated over the benefits. And, you know, at the time we were just like, I don't know about all this. This kind of seems a little bait and switch. What are they doing here? But now, honestly, they were ahead of their time in that thinking, the way they were thinking about kind of putting companies in multiple spots and having offices. I know one of our local development shops ended up doing something along those lines, and it seemed to go well. One of the perks they listed was like an annual trip to Vegas for you. Just like, it didn't say like it's a work trip. You're gonna have to work while you're there in the cold. But they were just like, get a free trip to Vegas just for working here. And so
there's some that I've been involved with previously in Kansas City and St. Louis, the first places that come to mind, and it's where they form public private partnerships around the spaces, and where it's not just an office. Also, it's economic development, and there's venture capital in the building. And there's seasoned people who had exits already from companies and have come back on company two and have chosen to be in those spaces instead of one of the office buildings they own. And it's a lot more about community than it is about cheap square footage options. And I think those are the ones where you see the real sticking power is where when a company gets to a point where they could afford to have whatever they want and they decide to stay because it's less about the square footage and the price per foot. And it's more not just about the coffee and amenities, right? Because that's easy, right? Like you can all have yoga on Thursdays. But it turns into the place that your community is built around and plugged into. And it gives your team members that want to be part of that more often an opportunity to be part of it. And the ones who only want to come in on meeting days when they need to, they still have a place to do that. And they can go back to their homes and continue working on their 227-inch monitors.
Yeah. Well, and given the way that all this has gone down in our state, there's a likelihood we're going to end up at some point having to do lockdowns again. And it's nice to not get too settled in just one thing and kind of leave yourself some variety, some options. You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but it does seem like it could just as easily happen again sometime in the next 2 years. So,
yeah, it's definitely a reality that we are going to be prepared for going forward. So whether it's a sense of this could happen, like there could be a resurgence, or it's like, this is just a part of something that's a possibility again in our minds. Yes. As a species, like we
sort
of had forgotten that this was a thing that could happen to us as animals.
Yeah.
For about 100 years. And then all of a sudden this happens. And, you know, there's plenty of places where there've been issues with disease and outbreak, but to having something happen on this scale, particularly when communication is at a global level as well, it's, we're not forgetting about this anytime soon. And having built systems that are flexible, I think are key. And I'm honestly, I think they're going to be beneficial in the long run, even if we don't ever have to go into another kind of lockdown or pandemic scenario. Just like
it's certainly more robust than it was before.
Totally. Yeah.
Everybody scrambled early on and were putting infrastructure in place for their companies so that they could actually do any of this stuff. Like they knew they could do it. They just never put any effort into it. And now it's like, oh, we got to do it now.
Yeah. And that's the thing we've talked about before is that a lot of these tools already existed, right? Mm-hmm. Like Skype's been around a long time.
Oh, yes.
Skype and webcams have been around a lot longer than it feels like. But it's just that nobody was made to use them that didn't want to.
Right?
If they were going to build a company.
For a while.
Yes. Like if you wanted to, if you were the decider and you built a company, you didn't have to use Zoom and Skype if you didn't feel like it. Right? You didn't have to do those things. And now that's not the case anymore. And so we've got all these tools in the tool belt that everyone's been forced to use. And so it allows those people who've never been willing to rethink what work is to be required to rethink what work is.
One thing that's really cool about that is that because it kind of became table stakes to existing as a company, there before there would have been like stalwarts of industry that would have made you play on their terms. Oh, you want to do business with us? Well, we don't do that virtual stuff. You've got to come here for every one of our meetings. You need to put one of your employees like in a building next to us, if not in our building, all that stuff. I wasn't going for anybody specific, but obviously Daniel's tuned into somebody.
Sure sounds familiar.
Yeah. I realize I was not making allusions to that, but we're certainly getting very kind of approximate. But like, that's not a requirement anymore. It's not something you can, I mean, I guess you can force it on someone now, but it's very clear that that's a power move and not some sort of like business requirement. It's just like, you're just doing this because it's what you want, not because it's what has to happen.
the companies that do that are just going to have a talent atrophy, right? They might be fine for 5 years, but the talent atrophy is going to be such that no one who can do the work is ever going to work there again. It's never going to happen.
That's key. I think that's huge, because I think that's what's changed. So as Daniel muses going, I wonder who you're talking about. And we all know kind of who I was unintentionally talking about now. You're absolutely right, Chris, that the change is coming because of talent, not because of vendors. Vendors aren't shifting these kind of workflow changes within companies like that. Mm-hmm. It's talent acquisition. And talent acquisition drove them one way, and then the pandemic happened. And now I can't imagine what they're trying. I mean, I kind of know what they're having to do for talent acquisition, but it was so different than the kind of the turn they took. I don't envy the people going like, what are we going to do with the building we were in the process of building to be super fancy and cool?
That's exactly what I was thinking about. I mean, the assumption is that a lot of those that are going back to normal as it was. And I wonder how that's going to float. I know the attempt's going to be made.
There's several. You know, those conversations are already happening at several of those, you know, Fortune 10, Fortune 50 companies already. And people are like, nah. Right?
Like they're already moved to another state. It's not happening.
Yep. Like, cool. You can't stand up this next project without me, and I ain't coming back. And so they're just going to be sitting there going, okay.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. I had a friend who works for a big local retail vendor, and they're definitely old school thinking. That boss like fought to keep people in office as long as he possibly could, and like was pulling people back as soon as he could. And my friends kind of resented this the whole time. And Chris, you'll appreciate this. My buddy sent him our 45-minute Instagram TV video talking about remote work, which we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
But he was just like, dude, I sent my boss that video, and I was just like, see, we don't need to be going back to the office. And my boss just said, nah. <He's coming back." laughs> And this dude's like, I'm pretty sure this guy's a director. And his boss just said, no, I don't care. Get your butt back in this chair so I can see you there at 8:30 in the morning.
Well, and just imagine us putting out, or anybody putting out a hiring, an inquiry for hire 2 years from now that says you have to be in the office 5 days a week from 8 to 5. who's gonna apply for that job?
Yeah.
No one. The answer is no one.
Yeah. Well, you might have some folks who don't know better. I mean, that happened a lot. There were a lot of folks that were maybe new to the workforce, didn't understand the dynamics there. That you know, there are managers out there who, you know, maybe aren't managers because they're the best managers. They're managers because, you know, they got pushed into it out of another field or something like that. And their way of managing was to
get the longest.
Their head out of the office, see who's sitting down, and then poke their head back in. And that's who was working. Whoever had a butt in a chair, that was who was working. And if they were on a break or whatever, or if they were spending too long in the bathroom, like you got, you know, hall monitor manager. And that's not effective management. People don't like that. And you might naively take that job maybe fresh out of school, or you just came out of your boot camp training, and this is the best you could do right now. But for the higher level talent, the folks that have done it a long time, they've already been in there, they ain't coming back to that. There's no way.
No, no chance.
Well, especially when you've got, and correct me if I'm misspeaking on the folks who've done this, but I think Twitter is 100% full-time now, full-time remote now. I want to say Google did it too. Like there's definitely a couple of, I think two of the fangs.
WordPress is definitely completely remote. I got a friend who lives in Northwest Arkansas that's doing a completely remote job with them, and half his team's in Europe. You know, they get together twice a year on some sort of a Spain visit or a whatever, and that's their interaction.
That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Can't wait till we have our company meetings in Spain.
Right.
That'd be nice. I've never gotten to go, but I've always wanted to.
We'll go surprise Casey in South Padre.
I'd be real happy about that. All right. All right, boss. We're all hopping in the bus. Let's do this.
Yeah. Knock on the door. You ready for our meeting, our one-on-one?
Yeah, my annual review was this week, so I figured I would just come to you.
wanted to be considerate.
Yep. Didn't want to inconvenience you, so here I am.
Yo, you got any snacks?
Good stuff. But yeah, even the big companies, even the, you know, the big four, big five, on the tech side, you know, Google keeps pushing the date back, and even then they're already being out front of it. There's no expectation you're going to be in the office 5 days a week.
Yeah,
especially in our industry, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We're no longer maintaining a bare bones server. You know, you don't physically have a server room to walk into, so you're going to be shell scripting your way in to whatever it is, no matter what. So,
yep.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is, like, so I've got a client I'm working with right now, talking through infrastructure for the stuff we're putting on for them. They're looking at Azure versus on-prem, and now you can even have an Azure cloud on-prem, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And so as a developer, I'm talking to the same Azure APIs.
Yeah.
To talk to the server that their bros down in their sysadmin team are managing.
Yep.
And so it's the best of both worlds in that regard, because before, on-prem required a whole lot more work for us, and like being on good terms with their IT team
and the security guard and
all of that stuff.
The secretary at the door, you know. Yeah.
You're sending people boxes of donuts so that when you request an upgrade on a thing, you get it in a timely fashion, you know? But that's not the case anymore. Everything's virtualized. Everything's got universal kind of cloud leaning APIs more often than not. And so it's nice. So, cause that's the thing, was they were talking about it and even looking at maybe a hybrid model. And it's just like, well, we're glad to have that conversation and explore that. And this is the way we would say, let's implement it if we're going to go that way. And they're forward thinking enough to be like, yeah, let's look at that. So I think we're going to start all cloud at first. And then as their data system gets upgraded to take that on, to take that pressure on, we'll start rolling it in house. And that'll be just super straightforward, especially because we do things containerized. It's just a matter of just, okay, give us your equivalent of this hardware now, and I'll tell it, go put it over there now, and we'll be good to go. So
it's interesting that Microsoft and Azure went that route, because, you know, they were kind of late to the game, you know. Mm-hmm. They already had Google and Amazon out there, but they knew that they were going to have some holdouts that would not want to do cloud, would want on some on-premise stuff. And that they were going to have to marry those two ideas together to make a sell, to get them to even consider.
Yep.
And maybe about a year ago, I started looking at some of that stuff, because we were kind of toying with the idea as well. We had some file servers that had to be local. And then I was like, well, Azure's got this API for some of that stuff that would, you know, you could still have a local instance of it, but, you know, we could just use a modern API to do all this instead of what we're this old 10-year-old code doing it. But
yeah, it was smart. It's fun to have spent years dogging Microsoft for things, but there's definitely places where they're making a lot of progress and doing some really innovative things. So yeah, begrudgingly, I give them kudos in those regards, for sure.
I still experience some internal shock when I realize that they have GitHub. Like, that's still weird to me, and I forget about it. And then I remember, I'm like, oh shit. It just still, it seems like a weird prank that they did on April 4th or something, you know?
Well, and even VS Code, like the fact that I would be fascinated to see the amount of open source code that is stored on GitHub and or written with VS Code.
On a Mac.
And obviously these are both open source products as well, so it's not to say, but
yeah, it's really strange.
And I think I can't say for sure, someone would know better than me, but obviously GitHub came out with their own editor years ago, Atom. Mm-hmm. And so I think VS Code is based on Atom, as I understand it. They're definitely Electron based, because I remember a friend of mine got early access to Atom and was just like, look how I can hack my text editor and with JavaScript. And I was like, what? And it was just, all of a sudden JavaScript programmers could modify stuff like they were guys making stuff in their Emacs editors. And so it was a brave new world then, but here it is taking over everything now. So,
yeah, it's, I don't know. It may never feel normal, just given the time frame that I started. But I mean, because I was in my second year of college when .NET hit 1.0 and 1.1, and my college was pretty quick to adopt it, and we were in it. Like, we were using Borland C++ 1 year, and then it was all .NET like the next year.
Wow,
it went quick. And I had a giant book for old Windows UI and then another equally giant book for the new .NET UI that I had to carry around. Do not miss that. They made good monitor stands later on.
Absolutely.
Very large books.
That's what we need for the arcade. Can you bring those up to the
Yes.
Because our Raspberry Pi arcade.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it was like a bad order or like we didn't read the specs or if we bought it this way intentionally, but it's too short. Like, you have to sit down at it to play it, which is the only thing that's keeping me from playing Mortal Kombat 2 instead of.
Yeah. You gotta be standing right in front of it. It's gotta be, you know.
Yeah. And so we need to get it lifted. And we were talking about this. We need about a foot and a half of lift, and it sounds like it could be right about the right size.
But those were about a foot and a half of book. It was I had a permanent lean for about a semester, just hauling that in a book in a backpack. But no, I don't have those anymore. Like, they, you had to move them once or twice, and then it was like, nah, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, that's too much book to move.
Yeah. I was an English major, so I had Russian novels weighing me down that way. But it's a different kind of pain. I brought up the Instagram TV, but I would love to take some time and kind of explore your. So you've taken on marketing here at Lofty, and like. And are doing a great job with it. Like, it's exciting to see all the content going out and the engagement we're getting. And, you know, I joke about that long video, but the fact that somebody took that video and took it to their boss to try and make a case is like, that's great. Like, we're helping non-technical folks with that kind of content. And I know that's kind of where you've not this is your first time where you've decided to wade into this part of our quote unquote conversation Friday afternoon deploy. But I would love to hear kind of for you, what are the spaces that you're kind of exploring? Like, what is marketing a company like Lofty look like? Seeing what life's looking like for you these days as you're getting more and more into this world.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking my call. First time, long time. Really appreciate it. I'll ask my question. Hang up so you can answer.
Perfect.
But no, right? So the conversation, you know, really revolves around content, right? But one of the big things for me is that you can only put lipstick on a pig for so long till everybody gets it. And so it's really fun to
write. Is this podcast the lipstick or the pig? Lofty's
the pig. Lofty's the pig.
Okay, okay.
But being it's not just about storytelling, right? So the case everybody makes is Apple, right? Apple doesn't talk about megapixels in commercials, you know, Samsung does. Apple doesn't talk about, you know, screen size in commercials, Samsung does. And the reason that's okay, the reason that Apple gets to do that aspirational storytelling is because when you get the product in your hand, it makes you feel good. And that's simplistic and silly. But the answer to that for our conversation today is, your shit's got to work. Yeah. And if you go around talking about how great you are at everything and your shit doesn't work, no one cares. So the first piece of that is Lofty has, you know, the company has to ship good code. We've got to deliver products that work. Because then, as we all know, referral business is the best business you can get. And none of us have to do anything for that. And it just shows up. You guys do the job really good. And then they tell their friends about it when they're, you know, when they're on their rich people yachts or wherever they're going. They're like, hey, your thing is great. And they're like, yeah, I don't know. These guys, I gave them a check. They did it. It was awesome.
When I'm at the yacht refueling stations, it's like, I'm just like, hey, can you move your yacht? Oh, by the way, where did you get that software I saw you had?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what has to be underneath all this. It's that the products we ship have to, the products you ship have to be good. And once that happens, then becomes the part that gets uncomfortable for people is you got to tell them. You got to say, look, we did good. And that's the part where it gets uncomfortable sometimes and it gets hard. And because people don't want to do that sometimes. It can be uncomfortable talking about what you've done. But people are willing to make that investment and to sit through it when they've seen the outcomes and they know it's not just blowing smoke anymore. And so being able to show up and, you know, I was talking about this with some friends, knowing that there's not places where I have to, I can't talk about that. Or that's something that I need to not reference because I know that the practice can't handle, you know, X, Y, Z. That's really liberating for me and for the communication side of the business is being able to say, hey, I know we deliver good work. And so then we can go out and we can push in places where maybe we didn't know if we could or not. And when we're on calls with people, we can talk about, you know, oh, hey, you've got this, you know, arcane offshoot of something that we've never seen before and we know we can handle it. I know you're concerned about it, but we got this all day in the bag. And that makes all the difference, right? That's when you get to be really forward thinking and really forward looking and aggressive and start telling the story about how you can help them be successful. And it's not just smoke anymore. It's really knowing that we can move the ball forward for companies and for us as a business, being able to push in places where we're excited about being.
Yeah.
But more directly to your point, you know, kind of where I see what's happening, this is one of the things that I think is really neat about being in technology and storytelling or in marketing is that so much of the emerging tech that we're using or the platforms we're thinking about, it's not being driven just by what we want to do. There's so many advancements in bandwidth and hardware that the things that are happening, the things that are coming over the hill are really exciting, right? And you can kind of think of these, you know, categories developing. Think about the, you know, kind of the our first version of interactive media was all text, right? Facebook and Twitter were all text. And then the transition to Instagram wasn't really about people being like, oh, hey, pictures are cool. We like pictures. What happened was, is everybody got a good camera in their pocket and everybody got a device in their pocket that could take those pictures and then also handle light photo editing. But at the same time, bandwidth availability for mobile devices shot up because of 3G adoption. And so not only could you have the processing power in your pocket now with these new smartphones, you could also get it to Instagram's server in a reasonable amount of time to get it on the page to share and then to look at all your friends' pictures. And so that's what we're seeing now with TikTok and all the clones is that it's not just 5G on the hill. It's not just, you know, long 4G LTE giving people more bandwidth. The things we can do on our phones have advanced to such a point that we can do this now, right? Making funny, silly videos has always been a thing. It's just that the bandwidth availability and the hardware in our pockets got to a point where we could do really cool stuff really fast. And the friction for those interactions decreased significantly. And so that's one of the things that I think is the most exciting about this is being able to tell similar stories, right? Like, we're good at this. We like this. We're normal humans. We're not reptile men. You know, you can relate to us. We're regular folk. But we get to do it in exciting new ways that we haven't always had access to. And I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, that's great. I hadn't even considered the like infrastructural technological barriers that were removed that allowed for platforms like Instagram and TikTok that were super media rich to flourish. That's pretty fascinating to consider. Like obviously the context that they came up in, but also as things go on. I mean, we spent the better half of the first part of this podcast talking about all the things that have changed as a result of COVID and paradigm shifting and technology and shifting to embrace all of this remote stuff. It's like there's going to be new things that are going to come out as a result of that, and it's cool. And like knowing that that's where your head's at when you're trying to take this gang of nerds and like get us out in front of things to build really really cool things for folks. Knowing that's kind of the story that you can tell. Is exciting. Like it makes me excited to see like, oh man, yeah, that's a great point. It's like, we're here to help you. I mean, I'm not saying that we're here to help you build the next TikTok. We're not China, but you know, like just helping people think outside of the box and not in the sense of just like coming up with like crazy random ideas, that aren't technically feasible, but just kind of shifting stuff is cool. 'Cause there's definitely new stuff coming in all the time.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, I really, there's a lot of other agile shops I've worked with, you know, in my tours of duty over the years. But that's one of the reasons that, you know, even on my side of the fence, I really believe in agile, is because agile gives us the opportunity. Because right, like we're on the 5G horizon, right? We're there. We're thinking about it. Devices are getting in field, personal devices, and you know, antenna devices on towers. And so, as we're going through workflows in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, there's going to be places where the things we can do are going. We don't even know yet exactly what we're going to be able to do with bandwidth and devices in that amount of time. And so if we sat down at a table and roadmapped out 2 years of a project, we could have to scrap it 6 months in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so having that agile framework in the back of the shop that we're understanding, hey, we're iterating for success. And what does that look like? And so, you know, kind of letting that permeate the process, understanding that if we do things the right way, exactly where it happens isn't always what we're concerned about. The process is going to get us there. And I can remember really early on in my career, people sat down and were like, we got to get a Facebook page. Help us get a Facebook page. Once we get that Facebook page up, you know, we're going to do all this. And it's like, actually, no, you're not. I can take your money. That's fine. I'll help you build a Facebook page. Absolutely. I can make the pretty links and I can make photo templates for you, but you're still shipping garbage and nobody's going to want it. And it doesn't matter if you have a Facebook page. So let's talk about what we're using that Facebook page for. Let's step back. Let's see what's going on here. Because I can sell your shit for you, but nobody's going to come back and nobody's going to buy it again. And so understanding that, you know, we've got to do content strategy. We've got to do these content buckets and they've got to be respectful of the hearer. They've got to be real. We can't sell garbage out the door. and understanding that doing good storytelling, doing good work is going to work on whatever thing comes next. So we're not going to have to be attached to Vine as the platform that we're successful on. Vine is just one of the places where we put our successful content. Vine is one of the places where we tell our stories. RIP Vine, I loved you.
I miss Vine.
I mean, that sounds like
every time I see
there's an app. Can you build this app? I need an app. And they're not even thinking about like...
Exactly.
These apps have a purpose. You can't just have an app. You've got to do something with the app. You don't have any goals or, you know, in the case of a Facebook page, they'd be like, they don't have any content to put on there. They're going to just open this and abandon it. Yeah. I think people see that and it's the new shiny thing, but you've got a really good point.
Yes.
Like there needs to be purpose here. You can't just do it. Mm.
And the thing we're doing is what matters. Where we share it isn't. Mm. And so, right, like, you know, when we're building software, what the software does matters. What size that button is in iOS isn't relevant. If the product you're shipping sucks, we can polish it all we want to. You're not going to get adoption at a rate that it's going to ever work. You're wasting your money. Sometimes we'll take the check, sometimes we won't, but understanding that it's a lot more about the bedrock of what we're doing this on. And so, you know, for me, that's the content and that's the storytelling, because then I can take that and I can put it anywhere. I can change the aspect ratio for this timeline and for this timeline. I can put this filter on it so it looks right here. And I can put these hashtags in this place and these hashtags in this place. But it's really about the content. It's not about where it lives.
Yeah. Now I'm getting excited about like figuring out 5G related stuff. Because the only thing I don't even understand the implications of 5G other than it gave us all COVID. So. Like there's a lot going on there.
I thought it gave us the microchips. I must have read the wrong Hacker News article. That's on me.
Well, there you go. Reading Hacker News will lead you in those places.
It happens, man.
The only place I know of 5G being in place is like in some football stadiums where they can do some really fancy stuff on a TV. But yeah, I think you're right that there's definitely huge implications for that kind of connectivity that just no one knows what to do with it yet. Like I think
right?
There's so much potential there. There's just like, I'm not even going to try.
Well, think about an AR experience on your phone. So no third party devices on our heads. Think about an AR experience at an event where they're not having to worry about nodes. It's all 5G and everybody's got, you know, a gig coming through on their phone. What can you do, right? And so then what emerging so as a technology emerges, what platforms emerge and what do you do with that? And so being willing to say, hey, we don't know, right? So we're going to make good stuff and then we're going to figure out how it fits in these places instead of just saying, oh, hey, we're going whole hog in on, you know, I remember a location based Snapchat filters. That was such a big deal in my corner of the world for an amount of time. And there were consultancies that sprung up just for that. That's all they were going to do was help. They had the approved by Snapchat, you know, button on their door, and they were making these filters, and there were companies pouring money into this when they didn't even have the architecture filled out on how to generate click-throughs on their profiles to get people to take action. And it's like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? You guys are just lighting this money on fire so you can get cool goggles that say 2017 and then the name of your business. That's not doing anything.
Yeah. That's... what's funny is you're thinking... When you said those goggles, I was thinking of, didn't Snapchat make glasses?
The specs, man. It's still a product.
Yeah. That's nice.
I don't think there's a wait list for them anymore, though. I think you can probably get them pretty easy.
What's funny is this, and this is where like the old conservative programmer in me comes in. Because like it harkens back to when all of a sudden all the processors became cheap and faster. And so it's just like, well, that's just going to make everybody worse programmers because you're not having to worry about memory management and all this stuff. And so now I'm just like, the part of me goes, we can't, like, like I see so much potential, but I also see so much room for error. Like, and this is where what's funny is if you haven't heard Joseph rant about this, this is one of Joseph's rants as someone who used to project manage huge infrastructure projects for like networking infrastructure for like Amazon fulfillment centers and stuff. And he talks about just like everything is lossy because everyone just assumes that there is almost infinite space for loss. And so the guy punching the cable into the building punches it poorly and there's a little loss there. And then the guy who punches it down at the wall doesn't punch it right, but it doesn't matter because it's just a little loss there. And I mean, we're looking at gigabits of data, so it's plenty fast. And then like the router's misconfigured here. And there's
sitting right on top of a incandescent light.
Absolutely. All of these things produce loss. And yet rather than like improving efficiency and reducing loss, we're just like, Let's get more. 5G, 7G, let's go.
7G.
So, part of me is like terrified that that's what we're doing. And yet, like, I don't know that there's anything inherently wrong with that. It's just I clutch my pearls when I think about it because I know that the inefficiencies that will be allowed to exist. And again, like, define efficiency.
Right.
Efficiency almost becomes a subjective thing in a sense. Obviously there's like objective senses of what is efficient and what is not. But if efficiency is based upon resources being finite in a sense, and you having a limited amount of it, and if you define whether something is efficient or not by how much of that amount of resource you consume, if you get more resource, while that thing might be still inefficient in the sense of it was very inefficient here, the inefficiencies are felt less. And so they are less problematic. And so it's like, okay, so where do we put our focus? And it's kind of like the paradigm shift that happened where as programmers, we became more focused on being more efficient at being able to read people's code, writing readable code, rather than writing code that is like compiles fast and does all of these things. We overcame the need for efficiency there. The efficiency we need now is in the ability to read and maintain this code so that we can move fast. And so like, I missed that part. I never wrote like lower level code that had to be very small in footprint and compile and have all this space. And so I'm always the guy who just like gets super mad when I'm seeing like single letter variables and people turning like names, multi-word names into like single letter acronyms in code. And I'm just like, we have space for that. Don't condense that. Write it out. That's not necessary anymore. That's not an efficiency we need. And then I sit here on the other side of that, seeing the potential, like the bandwidth scaling to that degree.
Like a project.
Oh, this is going to make everybody so wasteful and inefficient.
Like a project with 14,000 files eating up 600 megabytes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. There's a middle ground, you know, there's like, you know, you don't want to have like the giant class names, but you don't want to go with a single character either. But I think readability is the key either way. Cause if the code is too verbose or too abstracted in a situation that we have, it's really hard to find what you're looking for. But if it's too concise, it's also very hard to find what you're looking for. Like you can write all this stuff in a single line in Perl and it's going to be nice and tight and that's great, but you're never going to be able to decipher it.
I remember sitting with a data scientist, making him explain a two-line method to me, and it took 40 minutes and still wasn't able to explain it. And I was like, this is why this can never be maintained. Like he would, he just couldn't quite, he knew that it gave him what he needed, but he couldn't break it all down. It was a really complex thing. It was in Python. It was a method that like took six to seven variables in and spat like 10 out. And it was, yeah, yes, that's the appropriate face. But yeah, it's finding that middle ground, I think, is key. And so it's kind of cool to see us at another one of those transition points. So there was the hardware transition point when Silicon kind of boomed. And then now we're at a networking bandwidth wireless kind of tipping point as well. So it's something that I don't consider regularly, but it's definitely a cool space to play in.
Yeah. And we might be on the cusp of a really big one. You know, we're at the potential to lose the comfortable world of binary and have to go into like this quantum state understanding for low level stuff. And so that paradigm shift is going to be huge. And obviously it's not going to take, you know, a large share of software until it's like higher level, obviously. Like, it's got to be something that's readable, but that kind of paradigm shift doesn't happen all the time. It's like you get to a plateau at some point, and then you move to this next thing that just blows everybody's mind. You know, we could be close to that, and that could be kind of cool to live through, although it could get us all fired. So, you know.
The capabilities, the perceived capabilities of quantum computing are uniquely terrifying.
There's potential. It could be really useful. There's also, you know, this, I mean, it's kind of at a stage now where it's like we're putting a ton of energy into it and we're not seeing any returns. I don't know. It's one of those things. It could go either way. I suspect it's probably going to take hold at some point. We'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And we'll make it a profitable tool to use. But man, that could be a big one. It has the potential.
For sure. I joke, we've got our new space here, so we've got our teamy robot that we've formed our space. And for those who I think we've probably mentioned it before, but we're the software partner for a hardware company that makes personal robots. And they like you basically it's DJ Roomba, but with an Android tablet for a face so that you can do a variety of other things as well. And Chris and I were programming it here and teaching it the space and everything. And it was having a hard time getting through the threshold of a door.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is why Skynet is still years away.
Not ready.
But it's just like, but then when we give it quantum capabilities, quantum capabilities like that the time toward that apex will shrink very quickly. And so that's an interesting place.
You're to one of those
about. Yeah, it's
Boston Dynamic dog.
Yeah, totally.
Open doors and everything. Yeah.
Oh man, those things.
They're working on the hardware side of it, and then you know, software side of it too, really. But you start putting some bigger brains on that thing, it could be like a Black Mirror episode helpful.
We were joking about it. It's just like, this is a really funny thing to make fun of, and yet at the same time, it's probably some of the most impressive tech I've ever had my hands on. Like, I laugh at this and I'm just like, stupid robot can't go through a door, and I'm just like, what did I just say? Like, the robot that is following me
Yeah.
It recognizes my face enough to know who I am and is like, can respond to my commands, can't get through a door. So it's dumb. it can move around people and other things in its way because of the camera systems that are in place. But when it can't get through a threshold of a door, I'm just like, that is how Skynet will kill us, because we underestimate it because of those kinds of things.
We've gotten used to, like, we've got a first gen Roomba and it will go over the same spot over and over again sometimes. Like, it's because it's completely random. There's no intelligence. It has no sensors. You know, it can kind of find its way back to the base 70% of the time, you know, and the other 30%, we have to pick it up and go put it on its charger. And when you're looking at it like at that level, but it was a first gen. So, of course, it's not going to be super smart. Mm. So, you know.
They've come a long way from what I hear. We got a Bravo, which is like the mopping Roomba, and that was garbage.
Good to know. Good
wet smears all over.
We thought about getting one of those and decided against it.
Yep. That was a wise call. We're selling one in a garage sale for a friend of ours, and we've decided it's like the perfect garage sale item because you can get a decent amount for it, but it's still, it's old tech.
Yeah.
It's impressive to people who might not know what it is. So they'll buy it, but like, they're not going to pay a top dollar for it.
And it's, yeah.
It's like finding a Floby or a Tokyo.
Yeah.
Kind of a deal.
Like, you're familiar enough with it that you kind of know what it does, but you haven't been disappointed by it yet.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, this is the first time I've ever seen one of these in the wild, and it's a garage sale. Like, hey, that's not a good sign, but man, I'm going to get a good
deal.
Well, you know, we first got that Roomba and we turned it loose like at our old house, and it found some jewelry that had gotten lost, and like, whatever I paid for it, it paid for itself because it found some gold hoop earring that we were going to have to replace at some point. So I was like, all right, this, it's dumb, but I'm fine with that. It did what it was supposed to do.
That's funny. All right. Well, on that note, we've got Roombas mining for gold for us. We're still in charge. The machines are still subservient. So,
yep, they're not ready yet.
Yep.
Flash forward 2 weeks from now, where it all changes and we're all living in caves.
Right.
I'm gonna just quit and become a cobbler. That's what I always start. And when the machines become too powerful, I'll just become a cobbler. So. I've got 15% battery on this machine, and I don't trust its battery reading. And so on that note, I'll say, great podcast, everyone. I definitely don't want this to die and be lost. So, good stuff.
Yep. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you bet, man. We'll have you around more, and I'm excited to see what other kind of other ways you help tell the stories of the things that we're fortunate enough to get to build for our clients. So
absolutely. Exciting stuff.
See you guys.
See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Every day you hustling. Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.